I want to read just part of one verse. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, part of verse 10. By the grace of God, I am what I am. When one is giving a report, you need to be careful that you don't give the impression that you're blowing a trumpet. I would very freely acknowledge this evening that anything I am and any little that has been accomplished is due entirely to the grace of God and to His help from time to time. I feel I have very much for which to give thanks. Give thanks this evening for salvation. Many a time I think of the boys and others that I was at school with, and as far as I know, not many of them got saved. And yet God in His grace has saved me. I'm very thankful for salvation. I'm very thankful for preservation. Preservation in testimony, preservation in traveling. God, His good hand has been upon me in a variety of ways. I often think of other young men that started out in Banbridge, seemed promising, and they've fallen out by the way. And I'm not any better, but only by the grace of God, I am what I am. Not only thanksgivings for salvation and preservation, but thanksgivings for provision. God and His people have been very good and kind to me. God has provided for me in all these 57 years. Now, as far as the provisions of life are concerned, only God and my wife would know. I have made it a principle throughout all the years not to discuss financial provisions of any kind with anybody, not even with fellow preachers. I believe it's something between God and myself. Thanksgivings for guidance. I really believe that God has guided me in a variety of ways. Guided me in the choice of a wife. 58 years ago, we got married. Long time to live with one man, isn't it? My wife has been steadfast, faithful, good and kind. And many a lonely vigil she had when I was away so much throughout the years, preaching here and there. Somebody asked her not long ago how long we were married. And she told them, but she said, you know, he hasn't lived with me half of the time. Now, as long as you understand that in the right way, it's all right. It is verily true, though, I have been away most of my life. I was guided about leaving Banbridge and going to live in Londonderry. I'll say more about that in a minute or two. And I have been guided about going out into full-time service for the Lord. I have never had the shadow of a doubt but that I did the right thing. Many difficulties and obstacles, problems, but I'm convinced that God guided me and has guided me in a variety of ways. Now I'll stop you trying to count. I was born September 1920. I was saved in September 1934, when I was just 1 week short of being 14. I was received into the assembly in Banbridge when I was almost 16. Brethren interviewed me. And then after a few nights, Mr. McCabe took me aside and said, I have something to say to you. and he had a habit of stroking his little sharp chin, putting his foot up on a seat in front of him, and when he did that, you knew he had something to say. Now he said, "We're satisfied you're saved, and we're going to baptize you, and we're going to receive you into the assembly." And then he added, "Now," he said, "you will remember that for you is a very big thing. You'd have to share responsibility, share joys and sorrows, seek to be a help. I hope I've tried to live keeping that in mind. And I think it's nice and most important, perhaps for young people, to keep this in mind. When you have been received into the assembly, it's a very big thing for you. Just not a matter of filling a seat and coming and going. It's much more than that." I was commended to the work of God in August 1946. After I was saved, I came and went to the meetings regularly, but I would have to admit, without much exercise or purpose of heart, I didn't do anything I shouldn't have done. I tried to do what was right about the assembly and the meetings, but I say, not the exercise, perhaps, that I had a little later. Mr. David Craig, Scotch Craig, came to Banbridge for meetings. He had some ministry meetings on the Sunday afternoons. And one Sunday afternoon, he read Leviticus 1, the free will offering, and he linked it with Romans chapter 12. And looking back on that meeting, I feel that God helped him in a very real way. I felt singled out in the meeting. I almost felt there was nobody else in the place. As he pointed out from Romans 12, "I beseech you, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice." In that meeting, I was brought to face this. I wasn't merely saved from hell. I wasn't merely saved for heaven. But that precious blood that was shed at Calvary was shed to make me the purchase of the one who shed it. We closed the meeting that afternoon with these words, "What glad return can I impart for favors so divine? Oh, take my all, my weary heart, and make it only thine." Now, I will have to admit, I haven't been able to reach the heights that I would have liked to. But I could say that from that afternoon, my life was different. The claims of Christ came home in power to my mind and heart, and I was different in my life and conduct. I got a Sunday school prize, I think, for attendance. It was the life story of C.T. Studd, that celebrated missionary. Now, in that book there is a picture. It stirred me tremendously when I got it. And many a time it has done the same since. A picture of C.T. Studd's home, Tedworth Hall. He was a member of a blue-blooded aristocratic family, lived in a palatial mansion. Inset in that picture was a little one, a tall, thin, gaunt man, khaki shorts and an open-necked shirt. A rope from his little tent to a bush, and on it his laundry, and underneath it these words, "Esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt." Maybe the people would have said, "Didn't C.T. Studd throw away this and throw away that and throw away something else?" Maybe they would have thought that. what would God have to say about a man who made such sacrifice and spent his noble life making known the gospel throughout many parts of the world? That book and the picture impressed me. Now, in Banbridge, we had many folks around us, some who belonged to various gospel missions and churches, and we were always on good terms with them. But it wasn't the practice of any, the leaders or others, to associate with that was going on around us. We were taught that we should devote our time and attention, all we had, to that God had made provision for and that God had raised up the assembly. And I have sought to try and do that. When I went to Londonderry in 1941, I was received into the meeting there, a large meeting, 120 then in fellowship, active and spiritual, a large conference on Boxing Day and large gospel meetings, three Sunday schools. Now, I learned when I went to Londonderry as something perhaps I hadn't learned earlier. There were some in the Londonderry Assembly, and they would have felt happy to go there to preach, to go there to listen. And I was brought face to face with this: what does your Bible teach? And I faced it. And after a good deal of prayerful consideration, I came to this conclusion, that God had made provision for only one thing, and that was the Assembly. And I felt it was mine to devote all I had to that. Now, I didn't fall out with other people and was friendly with them when we would meet. That's not the point at all. My point was, I felt my whole being should be devoted to the Assembly. That's when I went in 41. But before I went, we used to have children's meetings, open-air meetings, cottage meetings. Used to go preaching quite a bit on Sunday evenings. One evening, a brother from the Banbridge meeting took me over to Ballysheel for the Sunday evening gospel meeting. And I had the audacity to read and try to speak from the Day of Atonement in Leviticus 16. To tell you the truth, I would be hesitant about doing it now. At the close of the meeting, speaking to the folk at the door, an old lady, her husband was one of the leading men, and I never could make up my mind whether she was serious or sarcastic. As she shook my hand, she said, "If you live, you might be a preacher yet." I don't know what way to take it, but that's what she said to me. A good, kind woman she was, and I would think that she meant well. As I said, when I went to Londonderry, I was in the shoe trade, the retail shoe trade in Banbridge. And completely out of the blue, I was offered a situation to manage a store in Londonderry. Now, I'd never been in Londonderry in my life. I didn't know a thing about it. But somehow I felt constrained to go. The last Sunday night I was in Banbridge, a brother opened the gospel meeting with an unusual hymn for a gospel meeting, I thought. "Saviour, more than life to me." But there was one verse in that hymn that was really a blessing to me that night and has been many a time since. These words: "Through this changing world below, lead me gently, gently as I go. Trusting thee, I cannot stray. I can never, never lose my way." I arrived in Londonderry, got lodgings with two elderly sisters from the Assembly. One of them, you would have thought she was a kind of officially on the oversight. The other was a little quieter. But they were particularly good and kind to me. I stayed with them for 3.5 years until I got married. We conducted meetings in cottages, in any little building that we could get available. And just the other day, I had a letter from a brother in South Carolina, quite a long epistle. He said, "I'm writing you to tell you the results of inviting a young man of 17 to the meetings you had in Kilfenan." I was still in business, but preaching at night. He got saved at those meetings, went away to America, married a nice Christian lady, brought up, I think, 4 children, and he writes me to tell me that all his 4 children are saved and in assembly fellowship. And he added, 2 or 3 of my grandchildren have professed to be saved. Now he says, you can see the outcome of having a few meetings and inviting a young fella like myself to attend those meetings. As I continued in the gospel in cottages, orange halls and barns, I had the growing conviction that business was not to me my life's occupation. I became convinced that it was the mind of God that I should give my life to the work of God. Now, on more than one occasion, the oversight in the assembly in Londonderry approached me about it. But not being clear or sure, I didn't commit myself in any way. On one occasion, I mentioned it to my father, and of course, he was very pleased. But he said, "My advice to you would be, try another field, not the north of Ireland." I don't know how a missionary brother, who's now in heaven, got to know that I was interested in the work of God. He came to see me in Londonderry, and literally, he sat up with me almost a whole night. Now, he was a good man, God-fearing, but I really believe he pushed me too far. Pushed me to join him as he was going back to Africa. Quite a number of others went back with him at that time. And in many ways, I'd like to have gone, but I had no light. And every time I prayed about it, the verse of Scripture came to me, the words that the Lord gave to Joseph and Mary when they went down with the child, "Be thou there till I bring thee word." And every time I prayed, that rose up before me, and I was convinced that perhaps a foreign field was not to be my field of labour. I mentioned the matter to the oversight eventually, and they arranged a meeting. I told them what my exercise was, and then I got to my feet. I said, "Now I leave you to discuss it amongst yourselves, and I'll be happy with the conclusion that you come to." The oldest man in the meeting said, "Sit down. As far as we're concerned, the thing proceedeth from the Lord. We can't say unto thee bad or good. We'll gladly give you our commission, our commendation." Well, that was all right. And I thought, well, I'll have to go and see my employer. If he had been good and kind to me, increased my salary several times, and in many ways I was happy in the business. I went to see him. And just when I was about to go into his office, my heart nearly failed me, my courage. And I turned aside into a little toilet just at the side, and I pulled out of my pocket a little red testament that my mother had given me when I left home. I let it open of its own accord. And the very first words that caught my eye were these: "Assuredly gathering that the Lord had called us to preach." I closed the testament, put it back in my pocket, went in to see my employer, told him what was in my mind. Most other things he said to me, "Mind you, there's not much prospect in that life." And he said, "You have a good job here and prospects are better." Well, I said, "You know, you and I view things from a different standpoint. Oh, no, he says, I know. He didn't want me to pursue that any further. But he said this, if after a little while you feel to change your mind, you come back and see me and your job will be waiting for you. Well, I thanked him. And many times as I've thought of that since, not much prospect in that life. He's dead. The business has closed up. And one night preaching out beside Kalinche, Mr. Duff came out to see me. And after the meeting, we talked a few minutes. He said, Jim, if you and I had stayed in business and made even £1 million, he said, we'd have to leave it every bit behind us. He said, isn't it good to have something for God and for eternity? The employer didn't see much prospect. Well, he viewed it from a different angle. Well, he said, if you're going to leave, will you stay till we get a new man to take your place? I said, of course I will. So in a couple of weeks, he phoned me. And he said, we've got a manager and he'll be with you on Monday. You'll give him all the details on the keys, etc. I said, I will. So right enough, on Monday, the new man came. I introduced him to the staff. I think we had 12 maybe. Showed him around and gave him the books, etc. And then I gave him the key. Said farewell to the staff. Said farewell to him. And went out. And I'll admit, I was not in a very vibrant mood. No job. No money. This is August. My wife expecting our first baby in November. I went round home to pray. And I wasn't very many minutes praying until God's words to Abram came to me with freshness and cheer. God said to Abram, I am thine exceeding reward. Help me. The midday mail came in. This was the Monday morning I left the business. Midday mail came in. There was a letter in it for me. And in the letter, 5 single pound notes from a man that I would not have expected to hear from at all. And just a little note. A little token of fellowship with you in your new job. Now, mind you, in 1946, £5 was a fair wee bit of money. I've never been out of a day's work since that. Now, I never thought of travelling or moving far away when I left business. My intention was perhaps to labour around the border areas, Donegal, Tyrone and that. But one day I was speaking to Mr. Moneypenny. And he said to me, after he told me he was pleased I was going out to preach, he said to me, now he said, I didn't spend all my life in the north of Ireland. And he would say, he said, I would encourage you not to do it either. And a strange thing, just days after that, Mr. Willie Bunting said to me almost the same word. I never thought of moving, but as it has happened, I did. I have been moving through the years quite a bit. Now, I've tried to keep myself busy, for I do believe, and I say this gently and carefully, God didn't send me to lecture or to loiter. He sent me to labour. He sent labourers into the harvest field, and I have endeavoured as best I could to keep busy, visiting in hospitals, jails, asylums, from door to door, and engaged in gospel work. Now, I'll not tell you the number of series of gospel meetings I have had. It's well over the half into the 6,000. I'll give you them in detail. Some of them short, some of them long. I have been responsible to speak at about 1,200 funerals, and I did over 500 weddings. But now when I came to 70, I stopped doing weddings. So if you want married, I'm no help to you. But if you want buried, I'm still doing funerals. I have shared special efforts with at least 23 full-time evangelists and shared efforts with a number of local brethren, our brother Samuel here being one of them. And it's nice to see from time to time those that were saved at meetings. He and I had maybe our first spell was something like 40 years ago out at Ballystockard, when a young woman and a man got saved, and they have gone on well ever since. Now, I've always tried to be very friendly with the other full-time workers and those 23 that I have laboured with. I never had a difficult word or occasion with any one of them. I've gone out of my way to be kind and friendly to all who labour at home and abroad. I believe that's the attitude we should take up. Now, sometimes our meetings were good, and sometimes not so good. Sometimes I had money to share with other labourers. Sometimes I hadn't. Some profess to be saved that have gone on well. Some have gone back. Some meetings we saw people saved. Some meetings we saw nobody saved. But I've often been encouraged when I think of the Lord Jesus. There were times when he preached and there was nobody saved. There were times when he preached, some professed to be saved and some went back and walked no more with him. Now, if that happened with God's perfect servant, should I be surprised that it would happen with me or with any other servant? Now, you would agree, and our brother John said rightly, it wouldn't be possible in these minutes to tell you all the places I have been and all that I have seen. And if perhaps I omit mentioning a place that's a kind of dear to some of you, you'll excuse me, because you'll know it's not easy just to include them all. The first series of meetings I had in 1946 was in a little hall at Culmore, just outside the city of Londonderry. And there were nights nobody came, and nights one or two came. You would say not a very promising start to a preaching career. I then moved over to an old barn. I had arranged to have some meetings in a Beeman's Hall, but local folk objected, headed by a certain gentleman, and we didn't get the hall. Got the hold of an old barn that belonged to one of the farmers in the assembly. He said, you can have it, but it'll need a lot of fixing up. So there's a man going to join me in the meetings, and he was a kind of a handy man. I'm not. And he said, I'll help to fix the place up. So we started in Ballymacroarty. Now, we had good meetings there. Some got saved. And as the result of those meetings, there was a Sunday school started in that old barn that went on for many years. And one of the converts that we saw, she turned out to be an excellent Sunday school teacher in the Assembly Sunday School in Derry. Now, those two series were quite at home to where I lived. But now, I got an invitation from Achovay, that's way down near Cookstown country, to tell me that Mr. Stuart Abernethy, who was a retired businessman and who came from that country, was exercised about having meetings with a view to reach his relatives and neighbours, and they would like me to join him. So I didn't know anything very much about the whole situation. I joined him. And we had 13 weeks in Achovay. And we preached Saturday and Sunday. I had no car, I'd only a bicycle, and wouldn't get home on Saturday anyhow. It's a long way from Achovay to Londonderry. So we preached every night, Saturday and Sunday. And in the goodness of God, we saw a number of people saved. We were out visiting one day, and we met a retired businessman, a very erect, kind of haughty-looking man. We talked to him a few minutes. Mr. Abernethy said to me, "It'd be nice if we could get that big man to come to the meetings." Well, I thought to myself, it would mean he doesn't look like it. But anyhow, he started to come. Took a seat away over yonder in the back corner. And after he got shaved, do you know what he told me? He says, "You preached at me every night." No, I didn't. But it was likely that God was directing his word toward him. I really wasn't, for I don't generally like to do that. Makes people feel maybe a wee bit uncomfortable and uneasy. I don't like to single them out and preach at them. But anyhow, he came. We were coming home from the breaking of bread meeting on the Lord's Day morning. And just down in the hollow below the hall yonder, I saw this big man come running for all he was worth. When he came to me, he was out of breath. And he nearly took my breath away. Said he, "I'm just after getting saved." Said he, "The burden of sin has become so heavy that when all the rest left the home," he says, "I went down to my brother Robbie's old disused house. And I got down on my knees beside an old couch. And I read John 3:16 carefully every word. I came to verse 36. He that believeth on the Son hath." And I stopped. Read it again. "He that believeth on the Son hath." Stopped. Tried it a third time. Said he had jumped to my feet. "I have it. God says it." And said he, "I've thought about it for 40 years. When he got saved, he said to some of his relations, "You know, I'm not going to go to the gospel hall. I'm not going to join the brethren." Well, we just let him alone. And I think, mind you, brethren, that's a very wise thing to do. Just let people alone. Let them read their own Bibles and be guided. And he said, "I'm not." One Sunday morning, he came home from where he'd been accustomed to go. Said he, "It's a strange thing. Those two men up at the hall there for 12 or 13 weeks are exercised about some meeting. Could you come? Yours, F.C. Glasgow. P.S. If you don't know who we are, your father will tell you." Well, now, I knew little or nothing about Scrabble or F.C. Glasgow or anything about the whole affair, but somehow I felt maybe I should go. And I went. Now, I can't give you many details, for time flies so quickly. But I was there for quite a number of weeks. First week I was there, Mr. F.C. Glasgow sat up at the front with his half glasses, and he just looked me up and down. Never twitched a muscle or said a word. I thought to myself. But on the Wednesday night, we had a right good company, and I think the Lord gave a measure of help to preach. And when we went, I was staying in his house, by the way, when I went round home with him, he just looked at me. He says, "That would do." So I felt I had passed the doctor. And I was there for quite a number of weeks. Maybe at the end of 6 weeks, I kind of felt it was long enough. And I announced that I would close on the Lord's Day. There was a young brother in the meeting, and I'd be honest, I wouldn't have put much down to him. But he came to me. Now he says, "You're wrong." Well, I said, "I feel that way, and I've mentioned it to the brethren." And the, well, he says, "No, I feel you're wrong." And he so pressed me. Well, I said, "All right, I'll announce three more nights. We'll go on to Wednesday night." On Wednesday night, the little hall, the old hall up at the top of the hill, they called it the Tin Tabernacle, up at the top of the hill, it was filled to the door. And a man and his wife came in late. And he got a seat there, and she got a seat there. Now, they had both been attending the meetings. And during the course of the meeting that night, they both got saved. And it was interesting to see them outside, out on the other side of the door, getting to see each other and to tell each other how they got saved. I thought, well, maybe that young fellow was right. And just putting it in a nutshell, I continued another 6 weeks. And God saved a number of others, by the way. After Scrabble, I was invited to Cumber. And as most of you know, Cumber is a strong Unitarian town. Not perhaps altogether favourable to the gospel. But I had a number of weeks in Cumber and enjoyed being there, seeing a number of people saved, all nicely filled night by night. Then after Cumber, Mr. Charlie McEwen and I were invited to go to Newcastle for meetings. Said to my father about it, "Not take you long there," he said. "It was always considered a very hard and difficult place." Well, Mr. McEwen and I started, and we had quite a number of weeks, and a number of people got saved. And it resulted in us going back year after year for the open-air meetings. And I think I'm right in saying we had 12 consecutive summers in which we preached the gospel on the promenade. And on a visit to Australia in Perth, at the close of the meeting one night, a doctor's wife said to me, "I'd like to speak to you." Well, I said, "All right." She said, "I want to tell you something you likely never heard." She said, "When I was a teenager, I was in the north of Ireland on my holidays. And," she said, "I got saved at your open-air meetings." And there she was in the assembly at Perth, along with her husband, taking an active part in the running of the affairs of the assembly. See, Scripture says, "Cast thy bread, and you'll find it after many days." Sometimes you wonder how many days it's going to be, but in that case, it was quite a number of years after the meetings in Newcastle. I got an invitation from Bloomfield Assembly in Belfast for a Lord's Day, and if you please, they asked me if I would have a ministry meeting on the Sunday afternoon. I thought to myself, they'll be able to say we have seen strange things today. Young fellow like me having a ministry meeting on the afternoon. When the gospel meeting was over at night, the oversight waited for me. And I really thought I had said something wrong or done something. And he said to me, "Would you consider coming to us for special meetings?" And I couldn't help, I couldn't resist it. I said to them, I said, "Was I here for a trial sermon today?" Well, they said, "Whatever way you look at that, would you come?" Well, now I said, "I would be interested, right enough, but I can't come just now. I have promised to join my father in Ballymena." "Well," they said, "when you're finished in Ballymena, will you come to us?" Now, Ballymena, as you know, is a large and fruitful assembly. I've been there for maybe 6 or 7 special efforts, and it's lovely from time to time to see a number of those that got saved at Ballymena. So I came to Bloomfield after Ballymena, and in Bloomfield, it was in the old wooden hall, and right enough, the little hall was filled. And in the first week, there was a woman and a man got saved, and I was encouraged and stayed for quite a number of weeks, and quite a number, I think maybe about 19, professed to be saved. I wish we could see it again. Bloomfield, we had a happy series. Then I had a letter from Willie Conway of Fort William. Mr. Preston here will remember that. He was in Fort William at that time. And he asked me if I would consider coming to Fort William for special meetings. And eventually I agreed to go. And I must say it was a memorable occasion. And one of the things that impressed me most at that time, every Friday night, they had an all-night prayer meeting. My, it was delightful, just throughout the hours of the night, to hear those dear brethren pour out their hearts to God, to cry to Him for blessing and help. And there was blessing, and there was help. For years, my late father talked about going to America. He had friends there, he had relations there. They wrote to him, he talked about it, but he never went. But in 1956, I got an invitation on my fare to be paid. And I thought, I'll not be like my father this time. I'll go. And I'm glad I did. I went. First meeting I was in was in Bryn Mawr, and it was a half prayer meeting and a half ministry meeting. In the opening stages of the prayer meeting, a man got up to pray. And of course, I was a complete stranger. I didn't know a soul in the place. And in his prayer, he said, He thanked God for me and for the meetings and for those that got saved. And then he said, "You know, Lord, every time we think about him, we think of that verse that says, 'Whose son is this stripling?'" He came to be a good friend of mine eventually. Now, there was a number saved. And amongst others that got saved at that time was a young woman. She came from outside Ballinamallard. And one night going out of the meeting, I detected an Irish accent. And I asked her where she came from. And she told me. I said, "Are you saved?" "No, I'm not. But I would like to be." Well, I said, "If you come to the meetings, you'll likely get saved." And she came, and her sister. And they both got saved. Now, eventually, she went away to Africa as a missionary. Stayed some time. Came back home again to look after her mother. And eventually married an Irishman and stayed here at home. But a good woman she is. That was it. Well, after I had been 6 months at that time in America, I must admit I was very tired, for they do believe in that verse, you know, "The here is a preacher, come, let us kill him," and they keep you going night and day. And I travelled quite a bit and preached. I was hardly wise to say it, but on one occasion my late father was preaching with Mr. Joseph Stewart, and they'd been a long time in some place. And he said to my father one night, he says, "Well, quit, boy. I'm sick of religion." Of course, in a day or two, he was ready to go again, you know. But I nearly felt that way. And when I was just about ready to come home, I wondered, what will I do? A Sunday before I had gone away, I had been in Letterkenny. And there was something about the meeting that appealed to me. And I thought, well, now I could go away up there into the quietness of County Donegal and maybe have 2 or 3 weeks' meetings and get a bit of a rest. So I wrote Mr. McKinney, and he sent me back a very nice letter. He said, "As far as we here are concerned, we have little or nothing to offer, except we're having a few meetings in a farmhouse. And if you would like to come and try it with us, we'd make you more than welcome." Well, I thought, well, that sounds a very small and simple thing, and I'll do it. There were Sunday nights in that farmhouse when we had 140 people, and the Christians would have said that likely 100 of them weren't professing Christians. And a nice number got saved, and some got saved at that time, still in the assembly at Letterkenny. That was Trinta. Did I tell you how long I was there? I pioneered in Trinta for 16 weeks. That was the rest I got. But still, it was well worthwhile. Now, quite a number of other places I came to. Ballinamallard, that young lady who got saved, she wrote to me several times from the States. She said, "Would you think of trying meetings in Ballinamallard? None of my family saved. I'd like you to try and reach them." Now I went, and I tried, but I couldn't get them to settle down to come. Quite a number of others came, and some got saved, but I couldn't get that family. But nice to tell you, just a very short time after those meetings, others came into the district with the gospel, and her family got saved. God answered her prayers, but not just in the way that she expected. After that, I went to Donegal Road for meetings. And after that, I went to Killinshie with Mr. McKelvey in the tent. After that, Mr. McKelvey and I were invited to Mother Fernachan. And we told them that the only time that we were free was June and July. Oh, well, they said, not a suitable time for us. Wouldn't do. People are busy. Holidays wouldn't do. Well, we said, it's the only time we have. Just have to leave it. Oh, well, they said, if it's that way, you'll better come and try it. But we think it's not a good time. But I tell you, they were wrong. It was a good time. And a few Sundays after those meetings were over, there were 14 who had been baptized and received into the assembly. If it's God's time, it doesn't matter whether it's June, July, October or November. I know we're inclined to think, well, there are certain times more suitable. In 1952, I had a few meetings in Glasgow.
in the old Plantation Street Hall. It was a kind of an Irishman's retreat at that time. And most of the responsible brethren were Irishmen and good men, though there were some good Scotchmen too, you know, but the most of the meeting was Irish. Now, we had a time of blessing that there were some got saved and some in the meeting tonight know all about that. I was back in Harley Street, that's the new hall, some years later. They asked me if I would come and open the new hall with a gospel effort, which I did. And again, quite a number got saved and the meetings continued. You know, generally in Scotland or in England, they say, well, now 2-3 weeks or at the most a month, you know. Long time, isn't it? Not long time to an Irishman, but it is to an English or Scotchman. But I was in Harley Street for several weeks and God gave blessing. In 1963, I got an invitation from Toronto. There were 13 assemblies that were going to unite and have a special gospel effort in the Queen Elizabeth Theatre down yonder beside the water. And they asked me if I would come and join with Sidney Maxwell. Now, when those meetings were announced, there were certain folk, of course, as usual, who were very enthusiastic. But there were certain folk just not so enthusiastic. And some said, imagine, spending all that money on that big building and those meetings and bringing two Irishmen. The preacher there called Herb Harris, and he had his own ways of saying things. He was having a few ministry meetings a week or two before we started. And he says, you're talking about spending all that money. Tell you what to do, he said. Don't spend that $1,000 down in Florida. Put it into the gospel. And then he says they're inviting Irishmen. Mind you, he said, if you brought angels, wouldn't please everybody. And to be quite honest, he said, I'd rather have angels than Irishmen any time. But the Irishmen came, and we had an excellent series of meetings. Now, it's not wise to count converts, but I think I would be safe in telling you that there were about 47 professed to be saved at those meetings. And there's a missionary working in Finland tonight, Bruce Cottrell, and he, I think, was the first to be saved at those meetings. During the first week, there was a big businessman came with his wife. She was in the assembly, but he wasn't saved. And he stayed behind in soul trouble. And he got saved. And he came out. And he put his arms round his wife, and they wept together. And one of the overseeing brethren that was responsible for arranging the meetings, he said to me afterward, he said, that sight and that man getting saved was worth more than all the money we put into the affair. And so it was. He was one of many. One other thing. Most of you would know a businessman in Rathfrieland called Windsor Toll. Windsor Toll asked me, would you consider having a few meetings in a store of mine, just at the back of the business premises? Well, I said, if you're exercised about that, I would be happy enough. And he said, would you bring Mr. Albert Aiken with you? I said, I would, very happy to. Now, we started those meetings in Windsor's store. And we used to tease Windsor's wife about this. When we would go round the doors visiting the people in the town and out in the country, it didn't matter where you went. If you mentioned Windsor's name, everybody agreed. But they never said a word about his wife. And we used to tell her this when we came in for tea in the evening. Everybody speaks well of your husband, and not a soul says a word about you. But now she is a good woman, and she stood by us loyally. We had good numbers and good meetings, and quite a number got saved. After that, we went to Brasheen. And an interesting thing, the first week in Brasheen, there were 3 out of 1 family that got saved, a number of others later. And those 3 are now baptized and happy in the assembly. And then after that, I had a little bit of exercise about going to the lessons. And I mentioned it to Brother Sam here. And we went. We had 2 short series, not usual for me or for him either. 2 weeks, then a wee spell, and then 2 more weeks. And you know, on both occasions, people got saved. I saw in the meeting last night a man who got saved at that meeting. And I see a woman quite regularly in the Ballymena district who got saved at those meetings and is now married and living in Ballymena. Samuel and I had two very happy, fruitful, short series of meetings. As most of you know, the Lessons Assembly has ceased to exist. I don't know whether the hall is sold yet or not, but it likely will be. A number came to you here and a number went elsewhere. But those were happy days when we were together for those two or three series.